I don't like coffee, actually. It's a funny thing how we are growing up, of course, anybody in the service, but particularly in the naval service, you know, the damn coffee, you drink all day long. And we got this habit here in this country, as you know, that every time we have a meeting, it's like, man, I see this morning, and you can't have a meeting, and a coffee you're drinking here. And by the time you get to your running cups, you get that brown taste in your mouth, and so forth, and so forth. And tea bar, well, that has the same amount of stimulant, it has a little deeper taste. So, and I got a little used to the nation. I was thinking the last time we met, it was way back in 59 or 60. You were doing a book, doing a piece on both candidates at that time.
That's right.
Well,
we had met you.
No, but I meant when we had the internet.
Yes.
We had the internet, why not? You were testing the candidate.
Yes.
So, and so on. Do you remember you had the long interview at that time?
Yes.
You did one on the candidates. Scotty Reston and I had the longest test.
Yeah.
And a lot has happened since the 11 years ago. It must have been early in 60, or was it late 59?
Yes, and you were. I was also at the time of embarrassed. I had to ask both candidates.
Same questions.
Well, not only the same question, but also to pose with me. And you were good enough to pose.
Oh, yeah, pictures.
It was pictures, too.
Oh, yeah. We'll get a picture now. I know that. Are you going to do, you going to write a book or some stuff?
Well, I seriously,
you just don't know.
Book
writing is such a chore.
I finished when I said nothing earlier. I don't know whether you saw the outline or gave the outline to images in general.
You gave an idea.
Yes.
That's all right.
It's you know, I think this is...
Ollie, the viewers on, she shot this. Go ahead.
This is probably the most exciting period. I mean, I've been here in this country for over 20 years. It'll be 21 years on the 1st of April.
But,
just
before I go to the sun.
Yeah.
You've been through some. You say it's the most exciting time?
It really is.
Why? Because of the eternal problems. Rather than the external problems. Wars, we always have, the internal problems.
And then you see in those days, the foreign policy was far more black and white than it is today, therefore decisions were easier. I always said that to President Truman, in these days, would be the wrong man.
He had a long time.
He may be wrong.
Yeah. It would be terribly difficult for him because Truman thought very simplistically. Incidentally, in retrospect, I can say that I happened to be the right man for that time. I couldn't have disagreed more than once. They look at each other.
Yes, sir.
They take one looking out in that field and then take one looking at each other. Or look at each other. Now, I have to spend a moment. He does pretty well sometimes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Good. Well, you see, look, I used to pour a little bit. Looking at these terribly difficult decisions he made, the one going into the Korean War, the reintroduction program, the Marshall Plan, and frankly, the hardest of all, it required deliverance. We did see things in some of the terms, and we said, well, that's what we're doing. At the present time, this office requires whoever occupies it. Not suggesting that anyone identifies himself, but trying to solve the office and other the problems, requires an individual who can think it. Staying in complex terms about enormously complex problems, and who inevitably, because he will be thinking in those terms, whoever he is going to be charged with being devious and inconsistent and so It's so much easier to leave. You speak in terms of, for example, when all of us think in terms of the wrong thing. He always brings comments. To all of us, of course, in this country or in the world, the great action of leadership of this century was Churchill's, because it was rallying the people in great cause. On the other hand, it was a similar in terms of leadership. It was something, I mean, it took a man of his guts, charisma, and all the rest to do it. It was simple. Here's we prefer tea, but no, just a man. Just a And at this time, in all the problems that we have, the urgent problems of Vietnam and the Middle East, and the more important problems of the two powers, east-west relations, and further downstream, Pacific, China, Japan, etc. It simply requires an ability day to day to watch the situation, to have certain principles as guide. There are certain things we're devoted to. We all are. We're devoted to basic freedoms and guarantees. We now know that in terms of power and use, never has there been a time when it is more important to recognize the limits of power, what it can accomplish, and sophistication and its use. You know, you say, as I said yesterday, not too much, not too little. That's the most uninspiring thing you could possibly say. But it's right. The British would understand that better than Americans, because while the British, the trillion times one thing, you go back to the Napoleonic days, that's another thing. And I would say World War I was probably a pretty straight up downbeat of that when you come in. But looking back over British history, the British leaders in general, pretty in their forefathers. They had to be. I mean, Britain didn't get where it did by simply blindly following our. I could say at the present time, it would be very difficult for Wilson to be president. Wilson, who was our most brilliant president in terms of intellect, not simply because he had a vocabulary of 67,000 words, which is twice as much as any other president. Possible exception of Jefferson. But anyway, but Wilson did think in up and down terms. Roosevelt did not. Neither one did. You think of T.R. being a man who's going to lead the charge, and for appeals and all that sort of thing. Well, true, after he left the presidency, he led the Wilkins movement against Taft. Of course, he was fighting for American entry into World War I, and wanted to lead the division and all the rest. He was Wilson's a coward. It was necessary to have that. He drew it to black and white. But Wilson, as the president, was a very subtle, complex man. That is why while he was known and praised as a progressive and as a liberal while he was president in the 30s, when those who, and some of them I think quite unfairly, were debunking him. They had turned him out as a gross reactionary who was just using the people. And then finally, at his centennial, they began to look back and say, well, here's what I fall. So he was pretty complex. So I'm talking about silly talking. Yeah, take care of you, that's what you have.
I'm talking about his training. Who do you consider your mentors? Their guides you really are.
Old parts, I'm not sure if I'm going to share that.
I'm not going to mention
that. Oh, listen. today's world. Who really who has ever seen the world quite like this? In the 50s. For example, I was saying to the immediate retiring chief, a British admiral of our naval forces, our naval command,
that's putting it in terms of the
we need a greater, or say a more believable conventional deterrent in Europe than was the case 6 years ago, and certainly infinitely more than was the case when we set up the whole thing 25 years ago. Then, without going into the change of the in what was once the monolithic character of the communist world, Chinese, but the aberrations, although they're not nearly as great as some would say, but they are significant. The aberrations in the Eastern European countries that remain in Yugoslavia, bubbling under the surface, even in countries like Poland. Looking at our own, on our own side of the equation, the fact that just talk about American leadership, a Europe that was poor as well as defenseless. That was one thing. But a Europe that was rich, and where it was easy economically on its feet, and with the capacity for defense, a capacity, well, not the reality, that it used to have, is something entirely different. So that's why the concept of partnership we could talk about 25 years ago now it can come to be doesn't mean the partners are all equal in strength or wealth, anything like that, but certainly it has great influence. And we talked around it. When you say who is the man, what man can find, I would say that it's very difficult to look back in British American experience and find a time when the world was quite as complex as it is today. Certainly we can say this. Churchill at the end of World War II did see great new forces evolving, and he thought of geopolitical terms rather than simply I'm not suggesting that we did it wrong and so forth, but Churchill would write and see the situation. I would say that this time, above everything else, rather than being a man out of the past, it needs to be the individual who occupies this position has to be one who can prepare himself and has prepared himself to see the world as it is, and whose mind is open enough that he can change his past views if the situation has changed, who will not be locked into preconceived notions. He must have deep down, and very, in my view, particularly to lead this country, and he's got to have some basic idealistic concepts, because this is a very idealistic country. I mean, as you know, we're sometimes quite foolish, but the Americans are suckers for humanitarian causes any place in the world. I mean, suckers in the wrong sense, but you just ask us, I mean, whether it's Peru or Romania or whatever the case might be, we'll help. If they had a huge famine in China, communist China, we would help if we could get the opportunity. We also, in terms of peace, we go overboard in thinking that that the problems of peace and so forth can all be said to be could probably be solved in either a conference or in the United Nations or by discussion, et cetera, et cetera. That we combine that with idealism. The idealists are always impatient. That's the weakness of idealists. And the idealists, being impatient, therefore, destroy the very cause that they so deeply believe in, because they become impatient with the international organizations, impatient with the slow process that is required to involved today to regulate time so whoever's here can frankly think about the problem, think about it, and by thinking about it, and this is another important thing, not get tied down day to day, nitpicking, irrelevant sometimes. Well, they may be relevant, but they're not very important. Arguments that go on in this place and that part of the room doesn't matter. Having the ability to recognize what the priorities really should be, what has to be done, keeping the eye on the people. And I think when I say we can't find people in past history, that there are people who can't. I would say in terms of the American presidents, my business is well known. Through my mother's influence, I always had a tremendous admiration for Wilson because she was a Quaker pacifist, even though Wilson didn't get us into war, led us into war, felt that he was a man of peace and so forth. But as we look now at what the world needs, you probably TR as compared to Wilson, be more pragmatic and possibly just as idealistic would better fit this time. When you get closer to our period, it's harder rejection.
I think you were very courageous in deciding to maintain American troops at the present level. In order to announce a feeling that you've done an enormous contribution to lowering the temperature
of the country. It's been very gradually realized, isn't it? And it will be lowered still. We have now left quite a We again, and that's the other thing, perspective. I constantly keep talking. We had a Security Council meeting this morning, and people were worried about the wire service story or the tunneling they saw last night about this and that and the other thing. And the most important thing is to remember that it is a difficult time. This is enormously difficult war in Vietnam. And ending the American involvement way that we must control, perhaps contribute to our peaceful world future, is difficult to pull off, but it's being done. So the Laotians, the Laotian operation, just like the Cambodian operation, I would never have wondered if I were thinking simply of the short range. It's so easy, that's the great temptation. The great temptation is to sit here and things are going pretty well. Nobody's particularly excited. And you look down that road and you say, now, where will we be next year? And that again is the reason why it's necessary for the leader to keep the perspective. Not to get bogged down in details. I know that the business president ought to sit and decide whatever mommy. Get involved, what's going to happen, do they have to hurry and turn the bullets and so forth. And all those things are technically experts on that. Important things to try to keep this perspective. You see, once the ocean thing is finished, later this spring, then Vietnam inevitably winds to its end as far as we're concerned. See, this is the reason why I tell some of our jittery colleagues, worry about it. I said, you were jittery the time of Cambodia, now you're jittery now. The important thing is, how's it all going to come out in the end? Now, it may sound bad, you understand, but if we have made a decision that is the right decision based on the facts that were created to us, and everything that we have done will assure our being able next year to look back on a successful end of the American involvement. And survival of Vietnam. How long? That's up to them. Now, in terms of the European thing, you say, I think one thing I should emphasize to you. When I talked to you before, I would never have said this. I didn't believe it. It's true then. I got it's true today. When Kennedy and his inaugural said that we will fight any place, anywhere, that was an appealing line. It frankly appealed me. It had been my view. That is no longer possible. And it's not only, it is possible for the United States to do it, but the American people will no longer support it. See, that's what first Korea and then Vietnam added on to it has done. Both actions, I think, once we complete this one, will in history look. I think this one, just like Korea, looks much better today than it did at the time we were going through the end. So this one will look better later on, I hope. But the important thing is that as we, what I was going to say is that the American people then were outward looking. We welcomed our role in the world. We were proud of our role in the world. We had, of course, a potential opponent, a monolithic communist bloc, that Americans would say in 75-80%, well, we'll keep stronger than they are. We'll do what we can to defend those who want to stand for freedom around the rim of communism in Asia, and of course, along the great line that divides Europe, and of course, in the newly developing countries in Latin America and Africa. Today, there is a new isolationism. It's interestingly enough, strongest among those who were the great Europeans of the Martian countries. I remember them so well. And I was one myself. That's your comment in America today, perhaps. Minority Republicans were in that group, but we, along with the majority of Democrats, were a majority of the Congress. It was a good thing that we were. But now, those who supported the strong American role in supporting European policy in the 50s, 40s, and 50s, who supported the UN role and American role in the world, they slowly peeled off. Until now, there is a turning in. Now, there are other reasons for turning in. First is disillusionment with the world role, getting involved in a war of a small country, losing so many people not understanding why or how or anything like that. There's also the fact that Americans are terribly concerned about their problems at home. See, that's the we had problems in the 50s. But they weren't in the surface of America. Look, the race problem, you know, we had a little rock. It's just so beautiful as we look back. I said, look around the mountain today. And yet, you remember what a stir it caused, whatever it was. But we had the race problem, the student problem. There was no student problem. We weren't mentioning it in the 40s or 50s. Even during the Korean War, you saw nobody. People were discouraged about the war. One of the factors which resulted in Eisenhower's win. So now you have a turning in over here. It's the same turning in, which is an interesting thing that you have all over Europe. The French turning, the Germans turning, the British turning. He comes along now at a very interesting time. His guts are doing all right, and not sure the British people will see now that they should support any more than the American people may see now why I believe we have to continue to play our role in Europe. They continue to play, you see, the Nixon doctrine has been widely misinterpreted as being a method of getting out of Europe. It's really a method of staying in. The only viable way we can stay in the world and play a role in Asia is now to expand it, of course, in this last message to include the whole world. The only way we can is for Americans not to be in the do-it-yourself world, but to be in more of a world helping themselves. Again, a very complex, sophisticated approach. Now, I understand attorney. I understand speaking of Richard. And also, as they see the utter horror and unacceptability of war in your age, war and increasingly has become for our world an acceptable instrument of policy. After World War I, World War II, the nuclear age is just unacceptable at all. So, people say, why do I get engaged in foreign adventures? They also there's nothing in it in terms of glory, manifest destiny, all those great terms of the 19th, early 19th century, Albert Beveridge Group, nowhere. These are the days when Wilson's self-determination and the rest, it's all flowering. So around the world, nations, insist on their independence. They insist on charting their own course. Oh, they want help and all that. They want to chart their own courses. That's the way it is. So, what have you got left? What you have left are your problems at home. And I think, therefore, that what we have is in all the developing countries, in some is that and almost bitterness about maintaining our forces. They'll do it. We'll do it still here. The majority will still vote for an adequate national defense. We begin to make the case. Frustrated about adventures in the world. Deeply concerned about the problems at home. The idea, why should we go out and help the Africans? In Africa, why don't we help the Negroes in the United States? Why go help the Indians in India? Why don't we help our own American Indians here in the United States? It's just a selfish term, but it's which I suppose, well, it's very kind of ironic, wasn't it? See, the old isolationism was bitterly attacked by many as being totally selfish. Selfish in the sense why you're isolationist, you want to help the European, you don't want to support point four, four and eight, and all the rest, and share wealth with the rest of the world, so you're selfish. And the new isolationist, you see, has a very different motivation. It is, we don't help those others abroad, because there is a higher good, a higher goal. In other words, we turn our idealism inward to help people here. It isn't that we don't help. See, the old isolationists were accused, perhaps quite properly, of not wanting to help other countries because they just wanted to keep it all for ourselves. We want to expect that. The new isolationists are not that. They're deeply concerned about people, but they say our people, not others abroad. Now, my view, of course, is quite different. Here's where we get to one of those mixes which make the old friends. Probably quite a few enemies. Mostly it's different people want to go, what is that? You got to do both. I mean, you can't let Latin America, African, Asian, two-thirds of the people in this world leading up to Japan, European, United States, you can't let them sit there without assistance, help, and so forth and so on. Because over a period of time, as the world gets smaller and smaller, closer and closer together. That'll be neighborhoods. Those are the ghettos of the world. And so, at the present time, too, as you look at the real world, we still must recognize that despite the fact that we are turning inward, we must not have the impression that despite, although it can be said that the Soviet Union has changed, the Soviet leaders have changed, and they have their differences with the Communist Party. but still expansions, because they have a deed, that not only a part of the world which is now common shall remain common, but that to the extent that they can, consistent with their own national interests, they should support those movements in the world which would bring other nations into that same orbit. Now, this is not Cold War language, because it's quite, it's very different from what it was in the 50s. But the leaders are different, the men are different, not only in their, shall we say, more business-like, smooth, pragmatic personalities and the emotions creeping off all of that emotion and creating the exaggerated things of cold, pragmatic, cookie, and brutality. Much of the other is an act. But nevertheless, with the world, that, as long as that situation exists in the world, that is why, again, coming back to our central thesis, what is, and that's Western Europe, which is still the region, is the most important part of the world, in terms of the East-West relations. When you look at SALT talks, one of the major problems in SALT talks is what happens to the forward nations, but we simply have to retain this overall strength, because by then we have to realize that one of the reasons that this one, Europe is turning great European nations, because their colonial experience is now finished and they're frustrated and tired and so forth. So the United States is turning. We also tend to say, well, the Soviet Union, China, communist China, also now, and maybe China. But for a different reason, theirs is a reaction, a very pragmatic reaction to the power that was developed that we have. Their failure to succeed. It's true. Once a vacuum is left, any place in the world, they will fill it. And which, I guess, the way I'm trying to say is this, that communism, whatever Marxism, call it what you will, whether it's the Soviet variety, the Chinese variety, even though it's an older philosophy now, and more mature, less adventurous, it is still a revolutionary philosophy. Ours is not. When I speak of ours, I speak of Western civilization. That's the difference. So what we do is to not throw up our hands and say, you're a bunch of revolutionaries, you're going to go out there that are our enemies and so forth. What we do on a very pragmatic basis is to say, all right, they have certain interests, we have certain interests. And this is the case of one, they have certain interests, we have certain interests. Do our very best to reconcile our interests, but recognize that that it is vital for us to maintain areas of strength. All parts of the world matter. Not to allow vacuums to develop in which the revolutionary forces may move within the earth. And that expanding regimes, which should be very detrimental to us.
That's what I mean, maybe you could talk about it now.
But the two, there were two, the period immediately before my November 3rd speech, I had to go against the advices of my most associates, and rather than asking them to withdraw or this or that or the other thing, to say why we were in Vietnam, why we intended to see the truth, and so on. If I had to do that, that was done alone. And Cambodia was just a similar decision. By law,
I do the same thing in domestic decisions. vortex he discussed, for you to be able to stay in space and actually see like a media as compared with the Tommy Ken. But on the other hand, the top, you know, taking which is powerful, politically powerful, trade unions, legislation was very dear to their hearts to what union wage sales, government projects. But we had quite an argument here until I finally decided. I just cleared the room. In this case, I didn't take a couple of days. I didn't have to. I got there about an hour and I decided. And
it goes back, I suppose it goes back to professor in law school, and you talked about lawyers and about the different kinds of people. In law school, we had fellows that loved the bowl sessions. Some of them were very good students, but the way they used to like to determine how they prepared for an examination, they'd sit around and talk about it in the morning. And then they go into the examination and do very well. I never sat around not when I came closely. Well, I would have the bowl sessions and sit in the classrooms, have a little lively discussion, and sometimes discuss the case. But I always found that I think more clearly when I think in an orderly way. I hear every point of view. I encourage everybody to speak up. I cross-examine. I'm a pretty good cross-examiner. I know what questions to ask. Listen. But once I heard it, then I got to sit down and decide. I've always done that. I developed the habits years ago. And so I
say, you know, I come to the end, did you then sit over your release?
No, I say that was a good strong 2 days. 2 days, not much. Great deal. And the same on November 3rd. It was about 2 days, two days. You know, when you stop to think of it, though, I would probably have been very well done for me. I was reading and preparing for these, receiving the Adams portraits and rereading some of Sanford's late Lincoln. God, you know, when you think of what he went through, you know. No time to think about what you do this time or what you do that. But on the other hand, I suppose the problems are different then. They're different then. So you've got a war, you know? Now you've got a war, you've got to do something else. I can see how Johnson, how frustrated he must have been. A man, basically quite a very strong man. But he sat here, and you know, he's the kind of personality that I'm talking about. Johnson loved to have people around. He had those damn three television sets going, all three of them. The pictures would be going into the other room. I sat in the room. Secretaries would be running in and out, call him, get this and call that when he'd hear. Every time the press briefings would come in, he'd have them written off particularly, but they said, call us, get a report, and raise hell. I read it. Said at the end of the week. Oh, I know everything that was said. I have a news center I see every morning. But I believe in reading it in a way that the reactions are almost totally unemotional. In my view, the worst decisions are those that are made in an emotional frame of mind. And I feel that my greatest responsibility is particularly life and death. Used to be totally unemotional. It's not easy, as you know. It is an easy professor. Particularly in these days, we think of the difficulties that Oregon must have had. Wilson got the A that Oregon must have gone through. It was really good to go to the customs. But it wasn't all on television. It wasn't all on instant communication. It wasn't people. Is quite true. Nowadays, people who need the What will be contributed? I don't know. I, first, the war, we will move on now. We have, I put out on the first line, I know I'm going to be out. So, we go down that, I think we have a pretty good environmental program. I think we're going to get through some kind of a half-ass, or maybe a very good welfare program, a good one, they take ours. People on the welfare, I think we're going to have a great improvement in health for but then I think we're also going to get something on our, some major, instead of revenue sharing, and if we don't get it now, we will lay the foundation for a massive government reorganization in the future. You always have to start 4 or 5 years early with these things that we started. But perhaps the most important contribution we've made, and it will not be simply because we wound down the war, will be for reasons that have their own specific, I suppose, that is to get this country, the people of this country, that period of instant news, everything in living color, including blood on the screen, and I agree, to get this nation to think in cool, reasonable, mature terms about our problems at home and about our role in the world. I do not know whether it is possible, but I do know this, that the moment the man in this office starts to blow, you know, I think, I do the press conference place, maybe after the Senator or somebody says, my God, Bob Hope said, I've talked to him in the 20s, and I'm going to give you a purple heart for that. The important thing, the president can be cool, unflappable, frankly, not exciting. Exciting in terms of certainly a revolutionary new program of returning government to the people, and welfare reform, and health reform, and cleaning up the air and water, and so forth. Maybe that. But cool, mature, a sense of perspective. This nation needs that now. And the real question is whether America can, after two frustrating wars, and after an enormous internal agony, whether we can grow up to a sense of mature leadership in the world. And by leadership, I mean leadership in a subtle way that I described it. That's the real question. Many of you from abroad, I don't have comment on, but you wonder whether we can. Let me say, this is just America. Many European countries are going through this same traumatic experience. The youth problem, as you know, is not limited here. But it must pass. It's got to pass. And because with all of our talk, you know, this is not all I have. The world isn't that bad. And this is really quite a good time to be alive. And when we think about some of the things that you went through in your life, and I have been through, my God, we're lucky to, you know, even if we weren't in these offices, we're lucky to be where we are. But perhaps it's education that has something to do with it. Perhaps it's the fact that, but first, it's education and also it's the communication. Now, one of the things that saves me is that I'm a reader rather than a looker. I never look at television. I see what's going on. But you know the way I handle the television? I read a summary book. I read it in cold print. I can tell from reading. In other words, I know what Cronkite said last night. Tom Gerald and Eric Severine and all of it. Very important to know it because television is what affects the reading. I've got to know what people say. But the individuals, I think that's the point. In any period, and maybe it was a better period, a more contemplative period, in a period when people thought more.
read more. Perhaps the students could have been better. And the difficulty now is that in this position, where he sits in this office, if he doesn't watch out, I've kind of got to learn him pretty well. He's been so bogged down seeing people doing things. If he has all that, to torture himself night after night looking at the television or reading his press release, he'd die. Hell, if I read my press release, I'd be here. I get it very more often than the television, except the rest of it.
But I do have a battle plan. I have a counterfeit that it is for me more important to watch your press conference on television, so that I know how the nation sees you, rather than be in the East Room and rush you, because that's only a small group.
Correct.
And,
without a very short.
Yeah.
We have been at one about once a month now for the past day, much period.
You see, I think that it will create a better atmosphere. I was really quite bored when the one before us. The question was so, it was clearly hostile. And I don't think it is hostile.
Yeah. All that, though, with the one on, the 3-on-1.
Yeah.
It's a nice forum that we can use that. And we'll have a general press conference in the future. Then you never covered one of these in the office, and I
switch to them.
I'll tell you what I'll do. Don't for God's sake tell anybody. I'll have a secret the next time I have it. I'll have one of those in about 3 weeks after the next live clip. But I don't know if I can give you a reminder. They're very different styles. You know, you're talking in a contemplating way. You can't be contemplating that. Press conference. You ought to see the question and answer handled with various answers. Everybody bears answers around here. I said, look here, folks. In 28 minutes, I'm supposed to answer at least 20 to 25 questions. Now, when you figure the time of the guy that asks the question, it's usually going to be 15 to 20 seconds. That's about 35 seconds of an answer. Now, one of the answers is kind of empty, and then a half to 2 minutes, usually the first or second. That's what is going to be your policy in regard to RFP or something like that. But when you get down to that, I think you want to be specifically secretary will be having trainers resign. If you want to be there, unless you want to get abrupt, just cute or something like that, the press conference becomes totally a show and not at all informative. And so the trick here is to get the press conference around to the point where you press everything in 35 seconds, and that's quite a mental exercise.
Fantastic. I just received a lot of written questions with follow-up questions.
Yeah, I told these folks, like over in here, we can let the follow-up is around 40 or 40 to 50. Well, if you've got 300, you can have follow-up because you've got to make one guy damn happy and then 300 others say, why did you answer my question? They got all that worked out. Well, he just spoke for 30 minutes and then took three questions.
That's right.
Once a year.
I attended two of them.
You've seen them.
Yeah.
I know. I heard. I saw one on television set. I know those comments.
What, if I may come back to Vietnam for a moment, what happened as you withdrew from Vietnam? Your influence on the central government diminishes.
Except for one thing. Military economic system.
Yep.
Would it be a hell of a package?
Yep.
Like Thailand, we had great influence in Thailand. We had great influence. So we'll have some influence. But it withdraws. It does substantially reduce, I agree.
But you know, it's in more than 1 year that the Thai government is in contact with them all.
That's correct.
And, you know,
well, the Thais put yourself in their position.
Yeah.
So see there, they see the Chinese, they see Hanoi. They wonder about the American commitment. That's another reason why Vietnam is beginning.
Right.
Go ahead.
Do you then foresee the development of third force countries as a consequence of the
climate, which would be like what? Like Saigon being a third force country,
or Thailand, or possibly in like 10 years' time,
Germany. And it's not bad. Not bad. What I mean is that
British element. But God, it isn't working anymore. If these countries can develop the capability, frankly, of being able to maintain their independence in a relatively neutral stance, that is certainly a goal that we certainly don't quarrel with. However, at this particular time, that would be a very dangerous thing for them to try to do,
right?
Because they just don't get whacked.
But as you lose, you said the South Vietnamese might find themselves
negotiating
with South Vietnamese.
But you see, they have to move political center. But suppose we're down, let's just suppose all we've got, they still hold American prisoners, so we've got a residual force. Well, who knows? 1,500,000, I don't say the number, whatever it is, but that ballpark. And they say, well, we'd like to our Vietnamese troops on China countries. We were going to have a political settlement now in terms of your controversy. We could deliver it. Unless, of course, it's time for prisoner thing, of course, is the priority. But once that is done, and then we're out, then North Vietnam and South Vietnam are going to have to work out their own problem.
We don't see the future of South Vietnam the way you see the future of South Korea, which you would want indefinitely to maintain, as you know.
I mean, you're forced to have put it this way, if we could get in South Vietnam, we had in South Korea a total withdrawal, then we would not have to maintain American forces because we, American units, the South Vietnamese can defend defend themselves. It is quite a terrible crack there, in Korea, different set of circumstances. Of course, you have the Chinese involvement, you have the weakness of South Korean presence. Of course, we are now beginning to reduce that presence. They will time that we've done. Because the South Koreans have a hell of an army. Now, the question is, with regard to South Vietnam, might be an option when they have the resolution by total withdrawal. We're for total withdrawal. But on a mutual basis, if they withdraw, then we'll get out of here. Now, the hills are very big because there doesn't seem to be any, lacking settlement, there doesn't seem to be any intention of starting the North Vietnam needs to withdraw from Laos. I just want to be completely bearish on it. They have problems. They're on three fronts. They fight enormous casualties. They need a pause. They don't have the friendly waters that they used to have in South Vietnam. South Vietnamese, I'm talking about like White House, it's been quite remarkable what has happened. It's hard for anybody to believe. I know I've been to Vietnam so often, and I know all the press is not all the most impressive cynical students about the art, about the South Vietnamese, the rest. They're corrupt, they're inefficient, they won't fight, it's changed. That's the thing we have to bear in mind. Well, Thompson says this. He's not a bad observer.
Is it, would it be possible if you indicated the name of the Kissinger?
Yes, sir.
Give me a hand with my book and the book name.
Yes.
Yes. And would it be possible maybe that in 6 months' time you could have another meeting?
I'd like to be more cooperative, but as you know, these guys out here raised hell. I saw one of your colleagues worse than dirty. And you know, he's around in Calgary's family, so of course I saw him in my house. God, you saw where you're going to see me.
Yeah,
but we understand.
Sure, we'd be glad to in 6 months. But Henry will I'll be glad to hear if Henry really wants it your approval. And
yeah, no,
if fun. Sometimes I talk about this period. In time it's done, it's one thing, but there's one last one. That used to be published in the year of that.
Henry, I just finished my talk with Henry Brandon, and I told him that we would cooperate with him, and that you would. So, and in 6 months, he could come back and touch base again. So, I'll have him go to your office now. You got an interview with him.
Who are you with?
Well, he doesn't need to see you. But no, he doesn't want to talk to you now. I just thought you'd just stop by and say, well, they leave. I finished, but I just wanted you to know I approved the procedure he said he'd talk to you about. All right, fine.
Thank you very
much. Bye.
And we said that very much.
Well, it's a complicated word.
Maybe in 6 months we got better news.
Yes, well, I think you probably will.
Oh, I think so. The legal system, I think it's going to work.
It may not be what...
It is going to be great. It is going to be... Nobody expected it. It's a disruption activity. Just like Cameron. No, nothing finishes anything in the modern world. The only thing that would finish is to go in and take out Hanoi. But those days are gone. Those were the easy days, weren't they?
Now that we walked through it,
I wish you were good to see it. But we did.